Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. And today we've got with us Charles Ulshahin Sonmez, who's lead developer at Kraken with Octopus and member of the DSF board member and many more things beside. Welcome to the show, Charles. How are you?
I'm good, Carlton. How are you?
I'm marvellous, marvellous. Excited to talk with you. I've just given you a whole load of things that you are, but tell for the audience, who are you? How did you find Django? What's your origin story? We always start with that, so let's go there.
Yeah, you always start with that question, right? I'm Chil. I'm a software developer of over 20 years almost now. I'm a computer science degree, also master's and PhD, so nothing surprising there.
No, that is surprising. Most people are like, I self-taught myself doing PHP and MySQL back in the actual, you know, just got the PhD in computer science. That's, you know.
Okay, maybe PhD and Django doesn't go as well as PHP and Django.
Oh, very good, very good, very good.
But yeah, that's the thing. I didn't know PHP good enough, so I thought maybe I...
No, go on, carry on. I've totally know what you're describing.
Wait, let me ask. It's because it's a big question when we just say, like, what's your origin story? Start talking. Let me be more specific. So... did you work with computers before you went to university, or is that something you discovered there?
I did have a computer since when I'm 10 years old. And when I was going into uni, my claim was, I do know everything about computers, so I don't need to study.
Nice.
I didn't even know it was called computer science back then. But by chance, I got into the computer science department in big university, and I think that was the best thing happened to me. I love programming. I love Django. I think it was around third or fourth grade of uni when I first got exposed to Django. It was the web programming course. But when I first built my app, I remember it very well. I was a faculty member, and we were I've been asked to build this web page for students to submit their assignments. I don't know why, because we were using Moodle, a good CRM for everything course management. I don't why we couldn't use it. I really don't remember. And I think 2007, around 2008, I worked again, not full-time. I worked at Marcophony, built their authentication system. It was a Django-powered app. It then turned out a really, really big company, 20,000 to 30,000 of employees. It was a big, big hit. It was a Turkish e-commerce company. So yeah, since 2008, I would say, I am using Django.
What was it that appealed at the beginning? What's your sort of, what was the bit that you remember building? You think, oh yeah, I like this.
Okay. Coming from a computer science background, you don't get to build software until very, very, very late in the process. I was super lucky. They started teaching us Python on the first day of uni.
Okay, that's quite progressive back then, because back then it was all C and Java and.
Yeah, I mean, really want to mention some of those people that's the good thing. If you build a good curriculum, if you build a good software, then you get the other people good people, people interested, people like minded around you. So yeah, then I stayed in faculty as a faculty member. I was saying,
you said talking about just actually building things with software as opposed to abstract studying.
Yeah, so they taught us Python. They taught us computer science using Python, Java, Lisp, Scheme. But like end of third year or something, like, what can I build with all that knowledge? Like, it was almost impossible to build like desktop applications. And then suddenly I met with Django, like with just like 10, 20, I don't know, maximum 50 lines of code. Bam, you have a website working with like a database connection and everything. Fascinating. I like that. That's it. This is my thing.
Okay. So the reason I wanted to ask, all this time later, do you think Django still got that?
I think Django still got that. My position in life has changed.
I guess you're not building apps in 50 lines with Octopus, right?
Less interest in prototyping. I have less time for teaching. But I think Django still has it. Maybe not as the this incredible framework that works super easy out of box for even a beginner with no previous web development, web application experience. But with all the ecosystem, community, knowledge, inspiration, I think it is actually more than what it used to be.
Can I ask, so you said you started when you were about 10 with computers. What were you building at that age, right? Because I have I have an 11-year-old daughter, and I can't even think of anything she would want to build on a computer now, let alone back then. But there must have been something that, like we often hear with guests that, you know, maybe it was building video games, or they had a parent who exposed them to it. It must have been something, right, that hooked you in at that age.
Well, sorry, I'm going to disappoint you. So when I was 10 years old, it was only me who had a desktop around my friends at their home. I wasn't building any application. I was just using it for...
Oh, okay. Well, that's normal. That's normal.
Like for navigating in the web, for chat, for like solitaire, playing games. What is funny is as a teenager, I didn't know that using a desktop is different than programming is about. So like back then I was super naive and like thinking being able to solve problems with Windows, you probably remember sometimes even connecting to internet was a challenge.
I remember when dial-up came, that was a huge thing, and then the sound, and then it was slow.
Installing application, so what I taught computers and programming was limited to using Windows in an advanced level. And super naively, I thought okay, that's it. I don't need to know anything more about computers or programming.
That's it.
But maybe it's still the same. Maybe there are people who think programming is about TikTok, content creation.
Or Minecraft or something, yeah.
But there are courses that, you know, I remember a few years ago at local libraries, of course, it's computer driving license thing. And it was how to use Word and how to use Excel and how to use PowerPoint and how to use these apps. And yeah, okay, all that stuff's important, but they didn't even touch on any of the other stuff. And it's but that stuff's important, but surely you could mention, you know, I don't know, one of these development environments, Python being the one I would, you know, if I was running that course, I would throw it in, but there are plenty of others.
Actually, there's something I always remember that now I think it's actually super related to Django. So, when I first started my bachelor's degree, Chris Stephenson, our head of engineering at Cambridge alumni, I think again it was first few weeks, he told us like computer science, like computers can use you or you can use computers.
Yeah, nice.
And like sometimes I feel like over the years, when I use Django, I feel like I am using the framework. And some of those other, like, I don't want to give a name because I'm not super attached in any other framework, but sometimes I play with some other, maybe easy to say, some, let's say Microsoft programming.
I feel
like they are using, like, I don't know if you know what I mean.
Well, the .NET framework is very rigid, right? It's like you've got to do it this way, and it's part of the class-based thingy, Bob. But I don't know.
That's the thing. You need to decide, like, if you're like your framework, your mindset will lead you to a way. Either you will use the tools for yourself, or tools will use you. So you need to pick carefully, and I think Django and all the Python ecosystem, we are super lucky about that.
Yeah, this one of the things that initially appealed to me about Python was the lack of ceremony about it. So I was programming at the time Objective-C, and there's a lot of boilerplate. And you know, at the time there was a lot of boilerplate. There's a lot of long method names. There's a lot of class construction before you get to write the code you want to write. And you fire up a Python script and it's like, oh, I just want to bang it out. And it's like 20 lines. And it's like, oh, yeah, and it does exactly what I want. And, you know, it might be a throwaway script, but you'd never get that expressiveness from, you know, one of these other environments.
Before we move on, I have to ask your research topics for your PhD. Like deep neural networks and stuff. This is back, you know, a while ago.
Yeah,
you know, what was that like, right? Because you were a little bit early to that party, right? I mean, what was the appeal? What was it like studying that then? And then, what do you make of, you know, the current ChatGPT world, which is sort of like all that promise now actually being actualized?
I don't know. Like, I'm still skeptical if it's been or not. But that's the thing. My PhD, so that was between 2013 and 2018. I did a lot of work about deep learning, deep neural networks, CNNs in particular. But I also have a slightly still burnout from my PhD. To be honest, like I didn't finish my PhD. It was one of the toughest decision I did. After 5 years into my PhD and moving to London, I decided to leave it. Super hot topics lately. And as a researcher in the area, the story is a bit different from my perspective. I think that there are great success and improvements on the field, but it's not magic. Like it's not working 100%. It's not even working 80% of the time. But that's not how they do the marketing to you.
No. Yeah.
And that's actually why I didn't want to, like, after my PhD, I didn't want to work around data science or data engineering or what they call it at the moment. It's mostly about using the tools of big companies, and you need to go with how good their performance is. It's not like, from my perspective, I was building models and evaluating systems, and as a researcher, that's what you need to do. You need to put something new on top of what's done. But in the industry, it's more like using that output at the moment. And I see only little progress from like little companies other than the big ones on improving on that. But with the data all those big companies have, it's actually now easier to produce better results. And that's what we are enjoying at the moment. And of course, they will keep getting more and more and more and more data and will improve the results. But still, I don't like... let's say I'm a bit skeptical on the RIA being too much into the topic. I quite like being on the web application development side of things rather than AI, let's say. Maybe, yeah, super unpopular opinion.
Tell us about your work, because you're working at Kraken, Octopus Kraken, which is you seem to be employing everybody, it seems. One of the biggest users of Django, you know, high traffic, really stressing it to its limit, etc. It's quite exciting. So tell us about Kraken, right?
I think most exciting thing about Kraken Tech is it is almost maybe after Instagram, I don't know, maybe bigger than Instagram now, biggest Django shop. I've been working in Kraken Tech as a lead backend engineer since for almost 2 years now. We have approximately 900 engineers.
That seems like quite a lot.
Yeah, under Kraken Tech. This includes data engineers, back-end, front-end, customer success engineers, etc. I would say roughly we have 500-600 Python developers.
Wow.
Globally. So that is why looks like we are hiring...
Everybody.
Everyone around. It's bigger because it's now a quite big team, and we have engineering, we are tech team in 10 different countries I would say headquarters of engineering team is UK London, from Tokyo to Australia, many cities, Germany, Italy, France, Spain,
the United States,
US, getting bigger and bigger there, and even Dubai now. And I don't know, I quite like it. I see Kraken Tech as the future Google in terms of like technology, like building technology. And I quite like our engineering culture. That's why I joined the team. Of course, every company, every engineering team have things they degrade and it's improvement on other points. But yeah, it's quite a good team. I'm working like the wider team I'm working with. We have good conventions, good culture. I think that's why retention rates are super low and easy to convince my other fellow Django Python developers who are fantastic to join to the team.
I think for a big company, the trick is retention rate. What's the turnover? Do people stay or do they move on? And if people stay, then, you know, okay, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I think, we're doing some things right. Like, we are working super closely with the community. We're using Django Python, which is the best thing about Kraken Tech.
Can I ask, what version of Django are you on? Or are you on a private fork already? Because that usually is what happens.
We are not on a... let me actually check. I'm curious because we are trying to upgrade and having issues with MyPy, which we can talk in detail.
Well, because as powerful as Django is, when a company reaches internet scale,
4.1. That's pretty good.
That's quite. That's very impressive for a large company to be.
Yeah, latest patch version as well. We know.
We are actually trying to upgrade Django. Currently, we have major issues with Django Stubs and MyPy.
Right.
There's actually a team of volunteers working towards the upgrade. So probably there are other smaller big issues blocking the upgrade, but it's going well. I think we are down to 5,000 issues. But let me remind you, it's a big monolith. It's a big repo. So yeah.
No, but those will cascade as well. You'll fix one thing, and all of a sudden, 1,000 of those will clear up. No.
No. Yeah. To start with, we had thousands.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe that team can throw a good talk on how they upgraded from Django 4.something to Django 5.something later in the year.
Okay. So can you talk to the typing question? So I mean, a lot of the issues are around Django Stubs and typing compatibility issue update, or not sure.
Yeah. So that's not something I'm working day to day, but for example, like I remember from a chat from last week, one of the issues was Django Object Manager. So apparently Django Stubs isn't willing to type objects of Django models. Object model of Django models, because with some not super recent feature, you can actually change the objects class of a model. And for example, this one took us like weeks back in forward upgrade, because I don't remember exactly, but you need to then type it with a super unfavorable way. Yeah. Or like there were two other alternatives. So coding practices, best practices, library restrictions, Django features. Actually, they reach out to me and ask if Django can change like the default assignment of reassignment of the objects. I go,
yeah, you're on the board. You can do it, right?
I am on the board of directors. I'm not on the steering council.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I mean, that was a super valid question, and the correct place to talk about this is the forum. It's currently forums used over the mail groups. So I did the redirection. I think like that's half of my job, sitting in the board, like connecting people with the correct resources or correct ways, and like making sure like we have a sustainable way of doing this, as like not everybody has access to a board member.
Sure, but as well, I think that there's like with you there is a you know, not just you, there are members of the contributor community who are working at Kraken or in contact there. It'd be massively interesting, I think, to get Octopus Kraken's experience about typing in Django and what, you know, what we can learn, what are the difficulties, and is there a way forward? I think there's kind of like a chicken and egg problem at the moment. It's like people know that it's nice, but how do we begin? And well, one way we can begin is by looking at a super big installation and saying, well, you know, these are the actual problems we faced. Can we address some of those? I think.
I agreed. I really wish we can like work a little bit closer with the Python and Django community like Microsoft does. I mean, I know what you were referring to wasn't that some kind of different feedback rule, but I think like we can also feed in our experience directly into the like Django code base with proposals, improvements, ideas.
Yeah. And even engineering time to make those happen, because there's lots of ideas and little bandwidth to get them done.
So yeah, that's what I was like. That's what I really like to see happen. But as every mid to big size company, there's always another agenda item. But I think I like. I'm getting into other people's minds on that as well. I think soon we might have some steps towards that. Also, like it's not Carlton. It's not just us, which is something. Okay, you can cut this part out later.
Or not.
We can decide. It's not only about Kraken Tech or people in the team. It's also about the Django community. The ways of working is different. So we always promote contributions into the Django, but we don't realize it's not that easy to yes, we are all using Django and Python, but contributing to Django, it's not only time or willingness. It's also like ways of workings are different. There are hidden conventions in the Django community, and it's not super easy for people who doesn't have any contribution background into that community to like come up with super advanced feature requests.
Entirely.
So like that's something that I've been thinking lately about. I made a talk last year in EuroPython and PyCon Spain about coding conventions. I think it was the first day of EuroPython. I was in a workshop about PyTest, which is my favorite test suite. I was listening to workshops, and I just realized we need conventions for open source communities too. I don't know if you're familiar with our coding conventions. It follows Google's Go coding conventions, basically just some recipes around best practices, the ones that we get to do wrong often, so that like it's a good reminder, and we use it very much during our day-to-day practice as part of mostly part of PR reviews. But yeah, we really need a convention for example, like for Django, for DjangoProject.com, like even for small projects like DjangoProject.com, like what's the convention here? Like how do you contribute, or like what's the preferred way of a specific thing? That way, like as a first timer. And again, first timer doesn't necessarily mean I'm a junior or mid-level dev. I can be like a lead dev and still be a first timer. How should I contribute to be welcome? Because also, like over the last few years, in like DjangoCon sprints or like other sprints or some other events, I have push people towards contribution, like more senior people, and like sometimes they received feedback, super surprising feedback, and then I started to motivating people to contribute is step one. Then do we also need to like manage the communication or like relationship after the how shall we do it? Well, what's the sustainable way?
I remember we were in Copenhagen at the sprints and it was a bit like, well, you know, how do we, I was a newish fellow, only a year in then, and I spent lots of time going around to individual people trying to help people get going, but I was doing the same thing time and time again, and I was, by the end of the day, I was exhausted, I could hardly speak, but yet there were still people there, you included, who were like, well, how do I get, you know, how do I, you know, join in a project here, how do we get, because it wasn't organized. Off the back of that, I did a couple of workshops which were getting contributed, starting workshops at the sprints, and they went well, and my sort of hope is to, you know, that can be something that other people will pick up the baton on. But we don't have a good on-ramp still, I think. I mean, the Django Nauts.space project is an amazing thing. It's to try and bring people on board and help them over these hurdles. But they're real hurdles, right? It's not, oh yeah, I'm just going to contribute to Django. It's not as simple as that.
Yeah, but I'm super optimistic. Like being in a team this size, and following a super unconventional ways of engineering, like we are super flat.
Yeah,
we
right.
Don't
okay.
We don't have managers. Like we don't have product owners. We put a lot of trust to developers, and like. But still, we are super organized, like there are teams, there are conventions, still we have clients, etc. And looking at the open source community and seeing how it works, it's a miracle. Like, they're not paid. Actually, they're not part of a team or, like, official teams. They only use their like personal time and still produce such quality software. So I'm super optimistic that we can fix things forward. But yeah, going forward in my software development journey now, like different topics are becoming my interest. And like different, I'm looking into improving the ways of working of community in different ways.
Okay, good. Well, that's a nice segue then, because you've been massively active in the Django and Python communities for years now. So it tells how you got involved in the community side?
That's thanks to Django Girls, I think. Actually, if we go really back in time, I think I've been taught this community feeling by again the team in my uni. I was happily part of some free software days for years, which was a big event back then in Istanbul. And I met people like Ian Murdoch, Richard Stallman, and like literally chaperone.
Help chaperone.
No, that's the thing. I was a second or third grade computer science department. The department was running this local free software days with like a DjangoCon Europe, but on free software. And we were having like FSF Europe present, or like I'm Murdoch. I even met Deb, like Debbie of Debian. I'm Murdoch is the author of Debian, and I'm a long time Linux person since I switched to OS X a few years ago. I think I've been told about value of community and role models back then, but really like it was Django Girls. I was doing my PhD back then, and some other woman in the department reach out to me to organize the first ever Django Girls Istanbul. And over the course of 5 years, we organize and help organize over 10 workshops in Turkey. We built a small community of our own of organizers and mentors. Not only women, like a mixed, a good diverse, like not so small group. Then we revive Pi Istanbul, which was a meetup group that was deserted. I don't know how many years ago. Started weekly meetups. Like I went to Pi Istanbul meetups for 6 months every week with my other 6 Django Girls Roman fellows. And I think things like this has big impact because we talk about a lot about like diversity, a lot about like feeling included. It doesn't always happen organically. That's also how I become a volunteer to become an organizer in London Django Meetup. I spent like 5 years with the community in Istanbul before moving to London, then in London. Of course, the first thing I did was to come to London Django Meetup. And I was a bit disappointed because it was a big one. Like we don't have that many people every month. It was a big one, or like 120 or 100 people, and I was the only other woman in the room, and the feeling wasn't great. So I'm like, okay, I need to do something to change this. And like over the course of the years, I learned if you want change, you become the change. And yeah, really, I think like that 6 women changed the scene, and like their commitment to the meetups changed the scene long before they changed the scene by organizing the pilot Django Girls workshops. But also, like, yeah, it works. I tried the same thing. Yeah. Also, my other co-organizers in London Django Meetup was super allies of diversity of and like women representation in the scene. So we worked together towards making the meetup more diverse. And last meetup, I think there were like 14, 15 women out of 80 attendees. And I think that's good. 1 out of 100 to 15 out of 80 in.
Yeah, no, that's certainly the right direction, but. This is what I want to ask you. I think, you know, we do well in the Python community. We do well in the Django community compared to, you know, how it used to be and in other areas of tech where it's not so open. But where are we still failing? What more can we do? Like, what's the, like, where do you think, do you know what? If we did this, it would help. If we did that, it would help. Because we want to keep promoting, keep working, right?
Yeah, we need to keep working. We need to keep educating ourselves. We need good role models, not necessarily women, but allies.
Yeah.
Like, Carlton, you're one of the few people in the community that made it super welcome for me, both into the community and both into the contribution side of Django. But I can almost hear you were doing great, but I think you also see that it wasn't super sustainable. So we need hundreds of Carltons around, not just 1, 2, 3, 4. We need to work more towards it. We need to keep it always in the agenda, always in the top 5 priority, both on the technical board and on the board of directors. That's the only way. We need to make sure we have women all over the processes. Like, for example, now we are looking for a new fellow, and now I'm over a year into the being a director on the board. It's time for me to dig deeper into our, for example, interview process. Who writes the ad for the new fellow? Is there enough diverse proofreaders? Who does the selection? Are there enough diverse people in that part of the process and the last part of the process? And I think having a diverse group of us help us come up with those questions not everybody can, not all of us brings the same question into the table, right? All of us will bring different questions, and more diverse we are, more different questions, more different perspectives, hopefully towards improving and hopefully towards to the constructive side of the things. Diversity is the key to diversity.
Yeah, no, I think that's just absolutely brilliant. You said I was welcoming and whatnot. I spent the whole time while I was a fellow trying to bang the drum of getting more contributors from different areas of the community, because you go and stand at a JangoCon, you stand on stage and you look at the audience, it's quite a diverse audience, but then the contributor base, it's still the same white English speaking men, and that's not, it's not to criticize anybody, but it's largely that way. And I always felt like that I was stood there going, come on, come and help, but I'm a white English speaking man, and it's like I can't stand there and improve things. I can say you're welcome, I can put out a welcome map, but it doesn't change anything because I'm not the right person.
I disagree. We need a life. Sure. My role models, there are great women, but also great male. Allies, without them, we can't make this work. I don't know, maybe we need to build a bigger feedback group. I don't know if you know of your impact, all the efforts you put in actually had a lot of impact in the community. And for example, we changed the I don't know if you have seen DSF membership guidance.
Yes,
has changed now. Community contributions as stated as valuable as code contributions, and I think that's a big milestone. We need to start giving those people some credit, because they're building the future of the community. They're building the next generation of contributors. It's not any less than code contribution. And I tell this from engineering management perspective. I'm a hands-on tech lead, my 30% is hands-on, 40% is people management, and other 30% is just project management, networking,
And, working in a big company.
And one is not, has less impact than the other. I don't want to quit hands-on development, because that has a big impact. If you don't have contributors, Django will not improve. But also, if you don't have people running the community, I also don't see how we can improve further.
Right, but Django's not the code base, right? It really isn't. It's, that's one part of it. It's a good framework. It's great for building your web apps. But, there are other options out there. So why do we keep going with Django? Well, because there's more to it than just the web framework.
I think there's also just to build on what you were saying, I think there's also I mean, Carlton has given talks on this, the sustainability piece of being involved in the community. So you can come in and be on the board and do a lot of code, but it shouldn't be expected that you do that indefinitely because people do burn out. So one thing I've been happy to see, and I guess Carlton and I are both living, is having been very actively involved and then stepping away a little bit, but still being able to contribute and help so that people can see the ramp and the process where you can still be part of the community, but you don't always have to be driving the change because it's unrealistic for someone to do that all the time, right? So the things you're doing right now, I mean, I hope you keep doing these for years and years, but maybe you just want to attend Django London. You don't have to be the organizer for forever because you won't be able to maintain that, right? So I think it's also important for people to see that there's an option other than just stepping 100% away and not going to conferences and not contributing, which is what I have seen with some previous generation people. Instead, there's a way to be involved, but less involved, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, it makes sense. And also, those are things that I keep thinking a lot lately. But it's natural.
It's natural, right?
That's life, right? You're not the Will you used to be like 10 years ago. I'm not the Cheryl I used to be 10 years ago. It was a challenge to build, for example, the community in Istanbul, the community in London, or like I put a lot of effort into that. But like, of course, it's not the same as it was 6 years ago for me. I've reached out of ideas. I think community had enough leadership from me. At some point, it will be a good time for me to step down and for someone else with more enthusiasm and more energy to come in and share their wisdom, ideas, energy, motivation, time. But how do we keep the loop? How do we motivate people? Now maybe it's time at least for me to think more about those things. But also we see comebacks, like Jacob came back into the board after years, and he's working with a great enthusiasm, so that's also inspiring because it's not always the newcomers. Sometimes us, I think I can call myself an old timer now. We also need to see the future, like what is it for me in 10 years' time?
Yeah, no, entirely.
You saying that makes me think too of just with meetups I live in Boston, and there was a very active Django Boston meetup before COVID, and then COVID happened, an organizer left, and it didn't happen for 3 or 4 years, and now it's coming back again, and there's some lead organizers who I've been helping, but it's interesting to be a long timer, and you get these, take these pauses, but then like right now I'm very active in trying to help. Like I just gave a talk, helping find speakers, because there has been that period of rejuvenation or of rest on, you know, for me. And yeah, it's not, you can do that, right? That should be the cycle, right? You're very active and out there, and then you step away a little bit. So it's, I'm now living that, right? Where for a while I thought, okay, I need to take a break from the local conferences, but now I'm like, no, I really want to do it and I have the energy. So it's good to not just say these things, but live these things. So I feel like I'm living that a little bit. But it's a lot of work, right? Even, you know, we've only had one meetup, and we're going to have more and more and more, but even in Boston, which is a big programming town, it just takes, I don't think I can go weekly for 6 months. But, you know, it takes a lot of effort to get it off the ground. And then you find these people who say, I feel like every meetup I meet someone who's been using Django for a long time at a company I didn't even know of that's quite large. And they say, oh, I didn't even know about the community. And yet they're using Django every day. So it helps, you know, helps bring things together.
Hearing about the Boston London Boston Django meetup, is that the name?
Yeah. Django Boston Django meetup.
One thing happened recently that I've been pushing forward since a year now is now we have a list of local Django groups meetups under DjangoProject.com, which has an interesting story. Do you want to hear about it?
Yes, please.
So in London Django meetup, I think it was actually not last year, but previous year, but last few years, we are running a Hacktoberfest. So instead of a meetup, we do a hackathon. And that edition, John Gold came in and said, okay, I want to do a non-coding contribution. What shall I do? And I wasn't prepared. I was like, can you make a list of all the Django meetups globally so we can put it on the website? He prepared the list. Then in the Django Con Sprints, Dave Turner, actually again from Kraken Tech, worked on the page and the backend required to display it on the Django project website. And I think recently Sarah filled in the event, and now we have a good list which we need to improve and keep maintaining. List of local Django communities meetups, which I think is one of the next steps that DSF should be focusing on, how we can improve, how we can help and contribute to local communities.
Well, one good thing is telling people they exist, because it's to get the word out is quite difficult. So if there's a thing on the Django website, that's kind of handy.
Well, I don't know how the time is spent on the board currently, but when I first joined, there was quite a lot of time was spent on funding requests for events. And that's one thing that the board can do, but also, as you've said, facilitating and telling people about existing things is another thing that the board and the community, people are doing the work, but if nobody sees it, then it's not fulfilling its full potential.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I'm sitting in the board. I'm running the London Django meetup, good communities, going to DjangoCon Europe, EuroPython. That's only thanks to I'm living in London. I don't know how many people in the community based in Turkey, based in Sudan, based in China, Korea, Thailand. There are great communities, there are great people. It's important that we build a better connection.
Yeah.
I can't keep talking about this.
No, but you're hitting one of my old bugbears as well, is that we've got this, we still have this kind of English language silo. It's not 100%, but it's kind of still English dominated, US dominated, Australia dominated, just because that's the old base. And there are so many users around the world. And what can we do to A, facilitate them, and B, connect with them?
So you're not a native English speaker. What can we, the native English speakers, do? Or are there any obvious things that you and the board are working on to facilitate this? Obviously showcasing the meetups is one, but are there, what are Carlton and I not seeing as, stereotypical Django contributors?
We need to work on that more. Unfortunately, there is not a structured work happening in the board of agenda in the agenda of the board at the moment. There is a slight move on DSF members group. We are going to open a few non-English speaking
Discord
channels.
Yes,
in Discord. I think we are going to start with Turkish and French. I'm 100% sure about the second language. I know about Turkish because I volunteered for it. I being on the board as a Turkish woman is my first step. I don't know, we need to, like, conferences has actually a big impact on the community. I saw in your notes about my talk in DjangoCon, yes. That's actually a good example. So that talk was on a topic that I wasn't super comfortable with. I led a team building a mobile backend with Django for the first time, and I was super aware, like, if you're doing a new thing for the first time, your lesson learns are super fresh. I wanted to give the talk, even though, like, I wasn't an expert on the area. Also, like, put a lot of extra information in mobile development with Django that I learned over the course of a year. Also, I was a mom of a newborn, having super difficult time, and I think that's the worst talk ever. I remember recording in a super difficult condition, like, I don't know, Robin was in the other room crying, I was having a hard time coming from a maternity leave, but really, like, that talk should be there, because, like, life is not always flawless, and not all the people are great speakers or, like, native English speakers. And that's one thing I bring into the speakers committees of the conferences I volunteer for if I do the, that task. I try to, like, motivate the group into not picking always the best of the best of the talks, and trying to see, like, what other, like, maybe the speaker is not the expert of the domain, but, like, what else they can bring. And sometimes you should just have, like, not great speakers. That's life. That's the reality. That's the person, like, sometimes working next to you.
Well, I was just thinking that I wish it was less of a barrier to entry to giving a talk. And I don't know if that means that, having a channel where people who don't get accepted for a talk but still have one they want to give can be on an official Django YouTube account. Or maybe there's a way that meetups can showcase the video, and the expectation is not that it has to be in English. So if the Django, Istanbul meetup happens, like, we should show that these things are happening, and it doesn't have to, you're not forcing someone to speak a second or third language for it, because it's all happening, but maybe there's a way to find it. I mean, even just the talk I just gave, you know, we didn't record it, but I wish, like, I'd like to see the Django London meetup talks. And again, maybe just the fact that these talks are happening, again, in other countries where you're not forcing people to speak English, would be helpful just to have it somewhere, or just say, if you are running a meetup and you want a talk to be put on a channel, like, here's a way to do it. Because the bar is too high for the DjangoCon events, I think. There's way more people who want to talk than there are spaces for them, and the community's, yeah, bigger than that.
Yeah, I mean, EuroPython is doing a great job about it, but, like, compared to DjangoCon, they are super privileged. They have, like, I don't know, 500 speaking slots or something like that. Yeah. It's like six rooms going for 4 days.
It's a bigger event.
But we still need to hear from those speakers too. So
having it live helps, I think, right? Because I don't know, like, your talk you gave virtual. It's a lot of work to give a virtual talk and not get any feedback, right? That needs to be part of it, especially in real time, or maybe just having a clear way for people to give feedback, because otherwise it feels like you're just giving and not receiving in the moment.
I mean, what I'm trying to support, what I'm trying to mitigate in London Django Meetup is, you want to give a conference talk, come and practice your talk in the meetup. Like, less people, more comfortable surrounding. You can receive feedback and you can improve your talk. But yeah, we should have more of those. But yeah, I think we also need to improve. Not improve, but like we are great as a community, but need to still work on it. Like that's the jungle chat, right? Like I like to hear more diverse speakers. I like to hear better keynote speakers. When I say better, I mean more diverse.
Yeah, well, I think it's just about the board or someone having the infrastructure so that it's easier for people, right? Easier to contribute to Django, also easier to give a talk, easier to do a podcast, right? I mean, it's not that Carlton and I are the only two Django people who should have a podcast, but it's a lot of work to do a podcast. Like, are there ways?
Girls podcast.
Sorry. Yep. Thank you. Yeah, that's true. Yep. Yeah, stepping up a level and thinking about, you know, from an organization, how do you make it easier to do these things is important. And again, especially when it's volunteers helping volunteers volunteer, right? So
yeah, I mean, the one way that I know is please do support and motivate those speakers around you who's not as comfortable with the language or with like their competency, because I think that's the only way forward. Telling a person you can do it is the best way that so far I know to support them. Yeah,
brilliant. Yes, you can. Okay. I think we're coming up slightly on time. So I just wanted to pique your mind on the more technical side, perhaps, if you can, for a few seconds. You mentioned PyTest, which is your favorite framework there. Is that your go-to, right?
Yeah, that's my go-to. I think I've been using it since, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years? I don't remember. And it's something I use day to day. I think I know something about it. I never heard of it. But yeah, I think it's one of those software that works out of box seamlessly, supports us to the end. And when you ask the question, to be honest, I don't know anything super, super, super technical about it other than all those features that I use without even noticing.
So can you spell parameterize without looking it up?
Parameterize.
You know, yeah.
I can't say it. Doesn't mean I can spell it. But
no,
like,
but every time I write that, I have to look up how it's
spelled. I used to look up. PyTest is great, but it's also the like the engineering culture you're in. For example, I'm writing more tests since last 6-7 years, and I think there are a lot of things that I don't know.
Sure.
But
that's always true, no?
One thing for sure. That's also something that I'm looking into in terms of tech test as well. Like the more senior the candidate, the more senior the developer, including myself, they rely more on tests and write better tests. And I think I also quite like the Django package, PyTest Django PyTest.
Yeah. Because it's got the helpers and the whatnot.
Yeah, it's just those are things like Django. It works out of box and it's super seamless.
Were you expecting a different answer, Carlton, or like? Cause
I don't know if I can talk more technical about this. We can
But I just wanted to ask. You mentioned it. You said it was your go-to. I just wanted to sort of get you to you know, paint your picture. You like it. Give you a more technical then, or different one. Octopus, you're using DRF for. Is that the case?
If you're going to go into Django Ninja stuff, I don't know anything about.
Oh, because I was just going to ask.
Django Ninjas. We do more GraphQL at the moment. This is off the record. Christie joined the team. We do have DRF, but we don't build new endpoints using DRF.
Okay.
Well, next time we have you on, we'll just talk about building GraphQL stuff. Yeah.
Okay, go on then. Go with the magic wand. We'll wrap us up.
Okay, so final question is always, you have a magic wand. What do you fix about Django? It could be more than one thing, but what would you want to fix?
Oh, that's a tough question. I wasn't prepared for this. I should have been. One thing I would... I know.
Good.
I would fix class-based views.
Okay. How would you fix them? What specifically?
Not that they need any fixing, but currently we are having a lot of issues. People just like picking any class based view they think appropriate and using it. But on a scale that we have, actually, it's not feasible to push Django objects to templates. I know for most of projects that's a super great feature of Django. But for us, that means extra hidden database queries.
Yeah.
And like has been a few occurrences that it took a few clients down. So we have super strict conventions towards not pushing Django objects to templates, but like half of class-based views seamlessly contributes towards that, which we don't want. So sometimes you don't need things to happen seamlessly in our scale.
Okay, so that's a fascinating question then. So just quickly, how do you enforce serialization prior to this to the view? Do you, like in the view or prior to this, to rendering the templates, you must be fetching all the related properties and serializing to something.
Yes, instead of Django objects, we used to do data classes. Now we are using authors to serialize all the concepts. And also like domain-driven design is big in teams in Kraken. It's a team-based option, but there are a lot of components in the monolith that actually doesn't persist the way we write data to database into domain and interface layers.
That's fascinating. Cool. We could have another podcast just on that.
I wanted to give a talk in... layered architecture with Django in last year's DjangoCon, and didn't get into the list.
you do know there's I know as we record this, there's 2 days left for the DjangoCon Europe CFP. Yeah.
No, but we can talk about more technical Django stuff in another episode.
The community stuff is equally important, so I'm glad that we focused on that, especially given you're on the board and all the work that the board is doing, which is also can be hidden, just like code contributions can be hidden. A lot of community work also isn't seen, but it should be celebrated because it's important. So I think we are out of time. We have links to everything in the show notes. And thank you so much for coming on taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, thank you. Also, I like to celebrate you for all your contributions to the community by not only the podcast, but all years of work. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on, Chad. Really inspired.
DjangoChat.com, and we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.